You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
If chemical weapons were used in Ukraine, would that trigger a military response from NATO?
It would trigger a response in kind.
Look at how they're stepping up. Look at how they're stepping up. And you're going to see when you're there, and some of you have been there.
We will have a different future, a brighter future, rooted in democracy and principles, hope and light, of decency and dignity, of freedom and possibilities. For God's sake, this man cannot remain power.
March the 29th, 2022. Those are some of the remarks from President Biden. Gaffes is a polite word. Political blunders is a little bit more harsh. Invitation to national security threat is a bigger concern. We are not live streaming at Larry Connors USA YouTube because we said something they didn't like the other day. We're going to do a censorship a little bit later in the same program, by the way. But when it comes to Biden and all the remarks he's been making, you heard some of them. And at one point he was addressing our airborne troops that are in Poland, and he said, when you get there, talking about getting to Ukraine, you're going to see, that suggested we're going to put boots on the ground in Ukraine. Later he said, that's not what I suggested. And when he suggested that, my God, the man can't stay in power, no, I'm not suggesting a regime change. Are we getting to the point that his remarks are not just mistakes and to be written off as a gaffe, but are actually a threat to national security? We're going to get into that question over this next hour. In the meantime, we continue to have a lot of different movement of these pieces in Ukraine. Supposedly peace talks are underway. Supposedly, there was an olive branch offered to Putin, which apparently he said, yep. And then we also have reports that Russian troops were withdrawing from Kyiv. Now we're told, no, they're just redeploying. All of this opens up the possibility of a mistake at the highest level. We're going to be joined later by Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, U.S. Marines retired, now at the Heritage Foundation, an expert on tactics and what's happening in Ukraine now, what could happen. And also you're going to hear from Senator, or rather retired General Jack Keane, on if these talks are really going to lead to anything. And in the meantime, there's talk that we might end up sending more troops to the European theater, not to Ukraine, but the European theater, because of what's been happening with Russia and Ukraine. And President Biden also holding a 53-minute phone call earlier today with leaders of France, Germany, Italy, United Kingdom. If he makes all these gaffes in public, what is he telling these leaders that could be considered or misconstrued? Will we get a full transcript or a heavily redacted or edited transcript? Also, Senator Tuberville, former Auburn football coach, said, you can't make a girl a man. And he says Title IX was meant to protect girls. Where are the women feminists that fought for that when we tried to level the playing field for women in sports? Which brings us to our other guest, John Daniel Davidson with The Federalist. He wrote a piece on his Twitter account talking about the truth being that men and women are not equal. Even though the Supreme Court Justice nominee of Biden can't define women, John Daniel Davidson has been censored by Twitter. Simply for that? And then we also have an early report, and I say an early, a preliminary report of what happened on that Orlando ride where the teenager fell to his death. I will tell you that I suspected this from the very beginning. And it may well prove true, but of course there will be more examinations to come. We've got a lot to cover over the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you have mold in your home, your family can get very sick. You need to call Wellington Environmental. Realtors, even hospitals and doctors call Wellington to solve mold issues. A Belleville homeowner discovered mold. Good thing he called Wellington. The mold is gone. And Wellington's new chemical process saved him $3,500. A university was facing some major mold issues. They called Wellington. Issue solved. The university saved $40,000. Wellington also helps research and test new products to deal with mold. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the BBB, Missouri and Illinois. Say you heard about Wellington on Larry Connors USA. Save $100 on any mold treatment or $50 on mold sampling. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beale Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
I've been holding out so long, I've been sleeping all alone, Lord, I miss you. I've been hanging on the phone, I've been sleeping all alone, I won't kiss you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Now, what's different about these negotiations, as you know, negotiations have been going on for a number of weeks on the Belarus-Ukraine border. What's different about these is a third party involved. President Erdogan will be there to certainly arbitrate the differences and see if something positive can come out of it. I'm not optimistic yet because I think Russia intends to grind this out and get a more favorable outcome than what they have right now. Clearly, Russia has not been able to accomplish any of their objectives in the month that's taken place here.
That is retired General Jack Keane, also serving now as a contributor to Fox News. And he says he's not that optimistic about these talks. There were comments earlier today that Moscow was going to drastically, those are the words, drastically reduce activity around Kyiv, where its forces are stalled. Then a Russian negotiator said, troop reduction is not a ceasefire. And then another announcement coming out, or at least an opinion from a U.S. official, saying it appears now that we watch all of this happen, no one should be fooled by the Russians' announcements. It does not mean the threat to Kyiv is over. Russia has failed its objective of capturing Kyiv, as General King just pointed out. But it's just redeploying, moving troops around on the chessboard. The talks that are supposedly taking place with the Turkish President Erdogan supposedly helping monitor and bring the sides together was looking as if it might actually be making some progress. When I say some, you have to gauge this in incremental movement. At this time, no one sees that Russia is just going to say, okay, we're done, we're bye, we're good. And they're certainly not going to see Zelensky say, we'll just bury our dead and we'll move on, let it be of the history and forget about it. Neither side is ready to take any step close to that. In Poland, meanwhile, we do have U.S. troops training Ukrainians on how to use some of the weapons sent by the West, although some of those weapons have yet to be actually delivered into Ukraine. The logistics, I don't know the background details. I'm hoping that Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood is my guest a little bit later in this hour, might have some intel information. I don't mean inside information, but I mean something that would give us a better understanding of why it's taking so long to get what we told would send Zelensky. And yet, even without the additional help and the weapons he's requested, so far, Ukrainians continue to put up a battle. And when you look at it like that, you also have to keep in mind that Russia has a grand plan, not a minor plan, but as retired General Jack King said, you have to recognize what Russia really wants.
Their interest is still to make certain that Ukraine is in their orbit, and I don't believe they've given up on that interest. So let's take a healthy dose of skepticism here about the negotiations. Yeah. Certainly we'd want something to come out of here that Zelensky can live with. That would be the goal. But we'll see what happens here. I'm not optimistic.
Well, he has reason not to be optimistic. In fact, the Times of London reporting that a close ally of Putin, acting as Russia's envoy in these negotiations last week, later met with Putin in Moscow and gave him a handwritten note from Zelensky outlining conditions Zelensky would consider in order to reach a ceasefire agreement. And the response, Putin said, "Tell him I will thrash them." In other words, we're not done bombing the hell out of your country, your civilians, 60 churches destroyed, in addition to numerous public facilities and housing facilities. And in many cases, they're going after civilians because they know that that might be enough to force Zelensky to reconsider. If you can anger the citizens enough and they suffer enough and they say, we can't take it anymore, that they will lose the will to continue to battle and may turn on Zelensky. Now, on the other hand, there's also been a report that came out that the Russian president is somewhere in the mountains in an underground bunker. That suggests, and I say suggest, if he's in an underground bunker, it could be because he wants to make sure he's extremely isolated from some other members of his staff that he has grown to distrust or suspect they might try to take him out, or that he's preparing nukes to be put in place and in use. And if not nukes, chemical weapons. And in fact, let me take you back to something Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, had to say, that what Putin might do and then turn around and wash his hands of any blame.
I think the likeliest thing you're going to see from Putin is trying to use chemical or biological weapons, for that matter, but doing it in a way that makes it look like someone else did it. So that's his history. For example, when chemical weapons were deployed in Syria, clearly Assad was behind it. But he spent weeks sort of building up this notion that somehow the rebels and the opposition to Assad were the ones that were going to use chemical weapons and did. And so my feeling is that that's exactly the kind of thing he would try to do here. I don't think he would himself admit that he's using these chemical weapons. I think he would want to blame that on Ukraine or NATO and say that it was them who did it.
It's certainly possible. And as we talk about often, the fog of war can create all kinds of misunderstandings and what is meant as one thing is taken as a direct threat. And all it takes is one shot fired at the wrong time, reports that might not even be accurate being circulated, rumor, gossip, all of those things can come into play. Friendly fire. You know these stories. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but the stakes at this point are increasingly high. Zelensky still needs more help. He needs more equipment. And this administration failed by not getting a lot of equipment inside Ukraine before the first shot was fired. And in fact, when the troops were massing on the Belarus border, and Putin continued to say, oh, it's just military games, and he's moving his ships into the Black Sea just below Ukraine where they could take over that port, we did nothing except believe him and just accept the fact that this leader, who is obviously a terrorist, a thug, a butcher, all those terms that Biden has called him, I would agree with. And I wouldn't doubt that Trump would use the same terms if he were the president at this point, although I don't think any of this would have happened, but let's say it did. The problem is that me or you speaking as a citizen is different than the president of the United States making the remarks. But I'd still accept those. The problem I had primarily with Biden is making remarks like, my God, this man can't remain in power. That does open up a door to the possibility that we want to see a regime change. The very thing that Putin is afraid of happening. But none of it's moving us any closer to any peace accord at this point. And General Jack King said Zelensky and brave Ukrainians continue fighting.
My take on it is Zelensky's asking for help. He clearly hasn't lost, and he believes he still has an opportunity to win. And that being the case, in my judgment, we should be all in. Now, are the odds stacked against him? Yeah, certainly. I mean, yeah. He would have to generate sufficient combat power, not just to stop the Russians from what the territory they're trying to take, but to drive the Russians out of Ukraine. And that would require a major counteroffensive, not limited counterattacks, but a major offensive. Does he have the combat power to generate that? And he's asking for all the help he can get. And that's where I think we should be as a mindset. Give him all the help that he can possibly get and be determined about it. But, I think we're in for a long haul here.
But when he says all the help we can offer, that does not mean U.S. boots on the ground, nor does it mean U.S. air cover. In fact, there's a poll out that says that 50% of likely voters believe Joe Biden is making a colossal mistake by using the Ukraine war to, quote, bleed Russia dry and topple Putin. That's a Rasmussen report that just came out. 50% think it's a big mistake to do what he's doing. 35% do not think it's a colossal mistake. And when you break it down, you find liberals are the only group that trust Biden's confrontation policy, although by just 2 points. 45% to 43%. And all of this is happening because we're seeing a rising number of experts and European leaders worried that Biden is aggressively escalating the regional conflict with Russia. And he's not doing it by actions in the sense of troops, but by his words or his blunders, his gaffes. We're going to spend more time on that in the next hour. Because even though They're just words. They're coming from the President of the United States, and they're directed at the leader of Russia. There's a piece in Politico talking about our secret weapon against Putin isn't so secret. It's talking about basically Ukraine is a battle for hearts and minds. And it seems Russians have been trying to shut off all information through the Putin-controlled state media in their area. But if we think that the battle for hearts and minds is going to work to our benefit, too many people still think that even from the national media, and understandably, after 80 years of Nazi and Soviet propaganda, they don't trust what they're hearing anyway. And Biden earlier today held a telephone conference with various leaders. I've not seen a transcript of what he actually said. I haven't even seen a brief notation of what he said, other than so sketchy you can't make anything out of it. And while we're talking about gaffes, I have no idea what he might have told those world leaders. We'll discuss that when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So President Biden held a 53-minute phone call today with leaders of France, Germany, Italy, and the United Kingdom. And according to the White House, the official statement, the president and the others affirmed their determination to continue raising costs on Russia for its brutal attacks in Ukraine, as well as to continue supplying Ukraine with security assistance to defend itself against this unjustified and unprovoked assault. That's all a quote direct from the White House. And went on to say, they reviewed their efforts to provide humanitarian assistance to the millions affected by the violence, both inside Ukraine, seeking refuge in other countries, and underscored the need for humanitarian access to civilians in Mariupol. They also discussed the importance of supporting stable energy markets in light of current disruptions due to sanctions. Okay, so that's the official statement from the White House. I don't know if they've actually provided a true transcript or if it's going to be an edited transcript, or we're just going to have to rely on that statement. Biden was asked by a reporter for his reaction to Russia's claims. That was after the phone call, apparently. Russia's claims it will draw down its military presence in two Ukrainian regions, including Kyiv. And Biden said, well, we'll see if they follow through. Let's see what they have to offer. Well, as I had pointed out to you in the previous segment, when there were reports that they were drawing down, pulling back, now we're being told, no. That's not what we're doing at all. We're redeploying, moving them around. In fact, the Kremlin-backed leader of the Russian province of Chechnya is calling for troops to storm the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv. And that was just hours after Russia claimed it was going to withdraw forces in hopes of maybe brokering a peace deal. According to the leader of the Chechnyan regional area, he said, we need to complete what we started and shouldn't stop. He also said, if Moscow would allow us to press the offensive, I'm more confident that we would have entered Kyiv and established order. This is very interesting because Chechens and Russians don't always get along together. They're acting now on behalf of Putin. Putin to an extent. But when you hear remarks like that, it has to make you think, are they going to say that Putin needs to do more and he's not, and they're going to force him into it? Are they going to take some action that's not sanctioned by Putin? There is a report, as I said earlier, that even after all of this is over, and not during the current invasion, but after all this plays out, at whatever point, the general who's head of the U.S. European Command told the Senate Armed Services Committee today that U.S. forces in Europe have increased from 60,000 to 100,000 because of the war between Russia and Ukraine. But he said, we're going to need to add even more when it's over. As he said, when this crisis is over, we need to accomplish a comprehensive after-action review in all domains. In other words, secure any weak spots. There's a story you need to have an update on, and if this is true, it changes a lot of things. There were reports coming out yesterday that negotiators working to end the war in Ukraine, including a Russian billionaire, were poisoned. That actually appeared in the Wall Street Journal by people, quote, familiar with the matter. That while they were meeting and following a March 3rd meeting in Kyiv, all of those involved, Russian, Ukrainian, and others, they left and they had red eyes, constant painful tearing, peeling skin on their faces and hands. One of them blinded for a few hours, had trouble eating. Of course, there were talks that they were poisoned. Now, apparently, the word is they were not poisoned. But I've been looking, and I don't see anything to explain all the conditions I just described to you. Except that it was environmental. Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, coming up.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Many car dealers are quick to sell you a car, but Ackerman Toyota knows that's just the beginning of your relationship. When it comes time for routine or special service work, others might be too busy. Not Ackerman Toyota. Hours and days to fit your schedule. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton, just north of Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
My next guest participated in the planning of execution of operations around the world to include Operation Enduring Freedom, all in response, of course, to September 11, 2001, has extensive background in tactical efforts and on the ground, not just in a corner office of the Pentagon. Retired Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood from the Heritage Foundation, and we just lost the number. It just disconnected. Russian collusion at work here. We'll get him back lined up here. Just suddenly jumped off the line. How? I have no idea. But again, what I was telling you about Lieutenant Colonel Wood, his background, that's why I'm reinforcing for you. He's been in the field numerous times. So it's not just somebody that's sitting around in an office saying, move these pieces here and those pieces there and we'll be fine. He's obviously active with the Heritage Foundation now as well and helped come up with their index of U.S. military strength and what we need and what we need to improve on. Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, back online. Semper Fi, sir.
Yeah, Semper Fi. Thanks for having me on. Always good to talk.
Well, let's begin with the confusion that's coming out of where we are right now in Ukraine and Russia. Earlier today, there were reports, well, Russia's moving back troops and maybe trying to make it easier to have a ceasefire agreement. Others are saying that a ceasefire offer was presented by one of Putin's ambassadors, and he said, we will thrash it, not going to take anything from Zelensky. And Zelensky is saying, we're not going to give up. In other words, what's the truth at this point?
Yeah, I think the peace talks are stalling tactics on the part of Russia, and all of the things that have been put on the table are just not acceptable to Ukraine. It means that they would have to give up half their country, promise that they would disarm, they would require security assurances from others like the United States and Germany and France, et cetera, that would guarantee that we would come to Ukraine's rescue if they were ever invaded again. It would be similar to the Article 5 component to NATO. And just all those things. You can't just walk away from the fact that Russia has invaded the country, destroyed half of it, thousands of people were dead. And then to get peace, you have to give up, you know, your sovereignty and independence and, you know, all those other sorts of things. So I just think it's a non-starter. And to hear the Russian side saying that as a trust-building measure, we're going to pull back forces from around Kyiv, which is ridiculous. Building trust, you know, after you've invaded and bombed and pummeled and murdered, you know, the folks in the country. So I think this move of Russian forces is either a feint to try to get Ukrainian forces to reposition more toward the east, and you just reinvest the assault on Kyiv, or they're going to be backfilled by Belarusian forces, which will come down while Russia strengthens position to the east. Or it gives them an opportunity to kind of rest and refit the force, redouble their efforts, right? I mean, they want to finish securing the eastern part of the country. And so if you're also trying to discuss peace and trust-building measures while at the same time reinforcing your invasion effort, you know, to take over half or a third to a half of the country, I mean, you can see the internal inconsistencies there, right?
And not only the inconsistencies, the confusion that comes with it, and again, is all part of the fog of war that can exist when things are not clear and a wrong decision gets made because someone misinterpreted something.
Right, it is. I mean, it's you know, the frictions, things don't go as you thought that you would plan. That's caused Witsian friction in war, and then this fog. Uncertainty. You know, things are cloaked. You're hiding the truth. You're trying to fool your enemy. You know, you started the thing by assaulting to begin with, and now you want to have some kind of trust-building measure. So we are a long way from this thing being over.
Well,
I just don't think that Vladimir Putin's going to give up with only a rump, you know, part of Ukraine.
I was sharing with the audience earlier that the Kremlin-backed leader of the Chechnya is calling for troops to storm Kyiv just after hours after Russia claimed it is going to back off or possibly redeploy, however you want to word it. But he's saying, let us in. We will move in and establish order. And what's the division line between Chechnya, this leader, and Putin? I mean, it almost suggests that, Putin, you're not strong enough to finish it. We will do it.
Yeah, well, you know, thieves, you know, bang together, right? So in Chechnya, you had different factions. You know, some were trying to actually create or run their own country. Others were aspirants to power. And so in any kind of set of relationships like this, you can always find somebody on the inside that is aligned with the strongman. You know, so a Chechen leader aligning with or doing the bidding of Putin. And the payback would be that he is elevated in position or has more power in Chechnya, right? So, you know, you always find these kind of, I don't know if it'd be traitorous or whatever, but, you know, these people who have their own agendas to accrue power and money and all these other sorts of things.
Opportunists. We call them opportunists, basically, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep,
well,
sure do.
Well, to that point, though, there had been reports circulating. I've seen it a couple times. I don't have it right here from me. And I'm sure you probably have heard the same, that Putin is now ensconced in a military bunker deep in the mountains. In other words, mm-hmm. when he locks down like that, is it for fear of the inner circle around him, or the next step is nukes will be in play?
Yeah, so family members, these reports of being in these bunkers, telegraphing possible an escalation to the use of nuclear weapons, and so the Russian elite is going to make sure that they're taking care of their own and family members and these sorts of things. There are tracking of planes, and some of these private jets will fly into certain parts of the country, and then they go off the radar, and they turn their transponders off. So there's all kinds of speculation, you know, that occurs. I mean, if you remember in the wake of 9/11 here in the States, you know, there were three planes, the two towers, right. the Pentagon, a fourth plane of the thing, but the rumors were that there were upwards of a dozen other planes, right? And U.S. Air Force fighters shooting things down. So in this world of chaos, misinformation, disinformation, rumors are going to run rampant. Are the Russians doing this stuff, going into the bunkers? Perhaps, but how do we know? And so all we can look at is the evidence that's on the ground, the war that continues in Ukraine, the resistance being put up by the Ukrainians, and this criminal activity by Vladimir Putin and his henchmen.
And, of course, you're speaking about rumors. The Wall Street Journal reported the other day that there was a report that there were cases of some of the negotiators from a March 3rd or 4th yeah. meeting that came down that they might have been poisoned. Now they're,
yeah, with
now they're dismissing that as environmental or something.
Yeah, so it's a person in particular who was one of these big Russian businessmen and some of the others on his group that are not official agents of Russia, but they're helping to facilitate these discussions. And they ate or drank something. The skin started kind of crawling. Some of the skin started peeling off. I think probably more of a sunburn thing as opposed to huge chunks, stomach issues and all that. But I don't think that we have heard about that verified or corroborated by other reporting sources. So
all right.
Is it possible? It's possible, but I don't know that Russia would actually poison people who were involved in the peace negotiations if they're wanting to use that as a fig leaf, right, to keep people engaged. You know, something like that would scare people away.
So Senator Rubio has suggested that if chemical weapons, that Putin might use chemical weapons, I'm talking about yeah. against the populace itself, and then blame it on Ukrainians actually doing mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, well, you know, we know he used sarin gas and assisted Bashar al-Assad in using industrial-grade chlorine in Syria. And he has used nerve agents and other sorts of chemicals to assassinate political opponents of his. So this is certainly within his portfolio. You know, if you try to do this false flag, you know, you do an act that you try to make it look like somebody else did it, and then it gives you the pretext to come in and save the day. It's certainly possible, but yeah. I just don't think that anybody in the world is going to buy that, you
All
know,
right.
that the Ukrainians would use chemical weapons. I just don't think they'll buy that.
I want to thank you, as always, sir, for your time. I know the audience always is glad to hear from you, and based upon your expertise, it helps us understand a lot better. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much. God bless.
You bet. God bless. Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. So we had this tragedy the other day in Orlando. When it happened, and I heard some additional details, I thought, I wonder if this might be the cause. Early investigations say I was right. Stand by. If you want to impress someone, I personally recommend Cafe Napoli, Clayton, our town and country, or St. Charles. Cafe Napoli offers private rooms for up to 50 guests, so plan a corporate party, an anniversary party, a birthday party, a party. Cafe Napoli has a location near you, Clayton, town and country, and St. Charles, where Cafe Napoli 3 is now serving lunch or Sunday brunch, only at Cafe Napoli 3 in St. Charles.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The tragedy that happened at an Orlando amusement ride where a teenager fell to his death is obviously under intense investigation. The family of the teenager calling for the ride to be closed forever. You know, that's like if a plane crashes, we're going to stop all flights. I mean, there's some limits. That I understand the family's grief and concern, but it's up to you if you want to ride. Is that not correct? But amusement park accidents, while rare, do happen. You might be familiar with Action Park in New Jersey. It closed down in 1996. It had become known as the most dangerous amusement park in the nation. From 1980 to 1987, six people died on rides in one fashion or another. From 84 to 85, 26 head injuries, numerous cases, 14 or more reporting broken bones, and then all these personal injury lawsuits forced the park to close. Well, if it's not being run properly, it should be. Then you get the carnies that show up at different towns and put on their little thing and put it all together, tear it down, move it to the next location. As we began to see some of the story come forward on this case involving the teenager, Missouri, by the way, from Missouri, when the first 911 calls were going in, folks could be heard talking about how he is not moving or is slightly moving, and then questions about was he properly buckled in, and the ride participants or overseers are insisting it was. And then during the middle of the ride, he just came out of the seat. The first question I had when I heard about the young man was, he shouldn't maybe not have been on that ride. He was 6'5". I had originally heard 5'9", but that doesn't change it. 6'5", 340 pounds. 340 pounds at age 14. 340 pounds. Played football, obviously. He had been denied entry to other rides at the park, according to his father. And the father said that when the ride took off, it looked like he was very uncomfortable. It looked like he started freaking out. And even according to the father and a friend that told the father, he said, "Tell my parents I love them. I don't know, man. I mean, he suddenly got freaked out by that ride." Now, the ride is supposed to be freaky and scary for you, but it's not supposed to lead to your death. Do you remember the rush for bungee jumping apparatus that were placed in various areas? In some cases, even in the downtown St. Louis area on the national park grounds, a crane was brought in that would lift you up and then drop you with a bungee. So you'd spring down and then back up and so forth. Those looked like they were pretty thrown together last minute, and there were injuries reported here and there. I remember when my girls were younger, we went to Destin, Florida, and they had something like a 3- or 4-story stage built where you climbed up all the way up, and then they weighed you, and then they selected the proper bungee band for you based on your weight. You couldn't just tell them. They made you stand on scales, put a harness on you, and then choose the proper belt, the bungee cord, I guess, for the proper elasticity and to hold you. The president of U.S. Thrill Rides says, looking at the video leading up to the deadly fall, he said, "My expert opinion is that they failed to secure the 14-year-old in properly." He said, "Not to ask him to step off or at least get him properly restrained, it's unforgivable. I can't understand it." Well, the Florida Department of Ag and Consumer Services that oversees all this, releasing documents, initial investigation dealing with the operations manual and previous inspections. And on page 57 and 58 of that 176-page manual, It deals with writer limitations and restrictions. It reads, be careful when seeing if large guests fit into the seats. Check that they fit within the contours of the seat and the bracket fits properly. If this is not so, do not let this person ride. That is bold in the manual. Yeah, from the beginning when I heard the weight of this child, I thought, I don't know that he should have been on that thing, but again, I didn't design it, and I don't know exactly what would be acceptable. And then, of course, was he properly buckled or not to begin with, aside from his weight? The investigation, the lawsuit, all of this underway, it won't bring the 14-year-old back. Coming up in the next hour, the more Joe Biden talks, the more threat to our national security. Is there a parallel? Stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.